Started the family afterward last Saturday, and this is our third meeting on the family afterwards, and I'm learning more and more. This chapter should really be studied early on in sobriety. We're on page 125. I'm not going to review too much. Ashley gave me a look when she heard the word review. If I start at the beginning of the chapter, we won't get to 125. The good thing about the family afterwards is that it's relevant for whether you're a day sober or 10 or 20 years sober. It's the spiritual principles of how you live in a relationship with other people, especially those who you're close to. It's particularly helpful if you're early on sobriety for everyone in the family. It's not written just for the alcoholic, it's written for everyone in the family. And they're assuming that the alcoholic is giving themselves to this simple program, going to any length. Now, I learned something new. By the way, I'm gonna have to retire my big book. It died, it's falling apart. It's on hospice. And it's getting close, it's on oxygen. But we talked about it at a meeting Thursday night. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. And what does it mean to fail? Those who do not recover. Those who fail to recover. And why don't people recover? Because they cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. He writes in a very style, very similar to Apostle Paul. He'll tell you a statement, and then in the statement, the next statement explains what that statement meant. And so we read this every meeting, but if you fail to recover, whose fault is it? Yours, because you're not giving yourself completely this simple program. And then they tell you that you better go to any length to have it if you want it, and you can't balk in anything, and be fearless and thorough. And the result's nil unless you let go of your old ideas. You see the pattern? And then, the final warning, remember, alcohol is stronger than you are, and that you need God. It's very interesting the way those five paragraphs are laid out. And so now we're gonna get back to the family afterwards, and when we're on 125, and they've, now at their point, that if you've worked with families or families are sharing now, also remember this was written in about late 1938. It was a different world. People live in very small homes or apartments. Country was very poor, still high unemployment. We weren't out of the Depression and Deep Recession yet. The war actually helped that, sad to say. But the country was trying to regain itself. And there wasn't a high divorce rate. Women did not have equal rights. They couldn't have the same pay. They couldn't work in a lot of professions. And so the divorce rate was low, and women had to stay with their husbands. Husbands had to stay with their wives. And remember, when they wrote the book, they didn't think that women could be alcoholics. Because, of course, they're men, you know, they know everything. But then they had the first woman come right before the book was published. And then, of course, it's an equal opportunity offender, alcohol, isn't it? Right? And so they say, another principle we observe is that we do not relate intimate experiences of another person unless we are sure he would approve. We find it better when possible to stick to our own stories. We don't relate others' intimate experiences, do we? A man may criticize or laugh at himself, it will affect others favorably. I do that, I make fun of myself a lot. But criticism or ridicule coming from another often produces the contrary effect. So I can criticize and laugh at myself, but don't dare criticize me. And why? Because when people are criticizing or ridiculing, another person, you're trying to build self-esteem. It's very sick. And my wife told me before we got married that she didn't want me to make any kind of little jokes at her expense. And I was reminded of that spiritual principle the other day, vehemently, I might add. And of course, I admitted I was wrong, and of course I was misunderstood, but we're not going to get into that. But it's true. We shouldn't criticize or ridicule other people to build self-esteem. Members of a family should watch such matters carefully. And we have to be careful of that in Alcoholics Anonymous, criticizing other people to build self-esteem. Anybody ever go to a meeting and judge anyone at the meeting? And then tell somebody else about that person, and then they tell somebody else. It's the AA, what's that that the Indians had? Smoke signals, or I don't know, I'm getting off track. One careless, inconsiderate remark has been known to raise the devil. Think about that. People will say something and it raises the devil. What do they mean? It means it makes that person resent them and arouses the devil and the person who's being offended, because, and then they don't forgive you. And so they talk about that in earlier on in the book, that if we make some remark to someone, we have to hold our tongue, and because one remark made ill time can ruin a relationship forever. And that's because people don't want to forgive, and they want to hold on to resentments. And so we're trying to work in a family where we don't want people to hold on to resentments anymore. So we alcoholics are sensitive people, huh? I think I'm still sensitive. That's what I've heard the last 2 months. Two of my sponsees told me I was very sensitive. And easily hurt or damaged. And that's true. Why? Why are alcoholics extremely sensitive? Because we have excessive pride. We have an excessive sense of self that's always threatened if you don't treat me right. And why? Because I have low self-esteem. So I have an inferiority complex, and I make up for that by being, omnipotent. Egomaniac with an inferiority complex. So how do people deal with this? It's hard. And so I don't want to be that way anymore, and I recognize it. And that's why we have the four prayers, remember? If you're sensitive and you feel like somebody's criticizing you, you say, well, they are who they are. Give me love, patience, and tolerance. I can be helpful. God save me from being angry. Give me a kind, tolerant view. By the time you've done that, that's essentially the pause that Russell was talking about. So Russ, don't forget the prayers. When you meet with her today, have your big book open to page 67. And as soon as she says something, you just look at the book and say the prayers. It does work. It works to pause and say the prayers rather than to react. Because when you say the prayers, you're with God. And then you're going to react in a better spiritual condition than if you're not. It takes some of us a long time to grow outgrow that serious handicap of being sensitive. I don't think any alcoholic really outgrows it. But the need for approval, dependence on people, it starts to go way gradually, gets better over time. And then when people criticize, you just laugh at yourself. You tell them you're right, you know, or you could be wrong. And you may want to take criticism and make a positive act out of it. Many alcoholics are enthusiastic, yeah, for what they want. They run to extremes. At the beginning of a recovery, here they're going to talk about the alcoholic goes in one of two directions as a rule. He may either plunge into a frantic attempt to get on his feet in business, or he may be so enthralled by his new life that he thinks of little else. And they're talking about, what are your motives when you recover? Is your motive to regain your financial standing, which is a self-centered, your image? Or is it to talk about how great your spiritual life is now that you're in recovery? They're not really God-centered motives. they still are about you and making you feel good by what you're doing. And so as either case, certain family problems arise. With these, we've had experiences galore. And the next few paragraphs are really, really good stuff. We think it's dangerous for the alcoholic if he rushes headlong at his alcoholic problem. Why? Because you can substitute the drive for money over alcohol. If you substitute anything over God, excuse me, well, you're substituting money for alcohol as your higher power. But if you put anything ahead of God, you're in trouble. It talks about that in the big book. And we have to watch for that, because we want to prove to everybody when we're new that we're okay, and we're going to be okay. And so we have to get over that. Nobody really cares. That's the sad thing. Nobody really cares if you go to AA, for instance, or if you're an alcoholic in AA. Nobody cares. I've never heard a negative thing said about somebody who went to AA. I've heard negative things said about people who won't go to AA. Usually by the families. And the family will be affected also pleasantly at first, as they feel the money troubles are about to be solved. Then not so pleasantly, as they find themselves neglected. So they have expectations. What happens if you have an expectation for somebody and they don't meet it? It's called resentment. Remember, what did Dr. Paul say? That expectations, the higher your expectations, the lower your serenity. The more you expect from other people, you're setting yourself up. Dad may be tired at night, preoccupied by day. He may take small interest in the children and may show irritation when reproved. Any alcoholics ever show any irritation when reproved? Anybody not? And so he's early on in recovery, and he's not used to the prayers and used to allowing people to be who they are. So then he gets irritated. If not irritable, he may seem dull and boring, not gay and affectious as the family would like him to be. So they have this idea. Mother may complain of inattention. They're all disappointed, often let him feel it. Isn't that great? You're in a house, you're not meeting their expectations. But here's what the alcoholic's saying. I'm going to work for these people. I work all day. Look at what I'm doing for them. He forgets that he was the tornado, remember, coming out of the cellar. And so he's thinking of what he's doing and how he should be recognized for that, and neglecting the service plane at home. Remember, practice the principles in all your affairs. That's what this is all about. How do you live a spiritual life? Beginning with such a complaint, a barrier arises. Anybody think that's true? With who? God, and with each other. And each person has a barrier with their higher power because they're angry at the other person. And so you have people in conflict who are not in relationship with God. It's not pretty. He is straining every nerve to make up for lost time. He is striving to recover fortune and reputation and feels he is doing very well. So what's his motives? To recover fortune and reputation, not seeking God. And so when you do that, you might as well, eventually you will drink if that's what you're doing. But you're in conflict with everybody and everything because you've got your plan, and anything that threatens your plan is going to upset you. If you have a plan to recover fortune, reputation, somebody gets in the way, well, what's going to happen? You're going to get angry, or you're afraid you're not going to get it. Sometimes mother and children don't think so. They don't think he's doing well. Having been neglected and misused in the past, they think, notice the words here, they think father owes them more than they are getting. They're owed this. So they're ill too. That's why we have Alan on. Everybody in the family's sick in an alcoholic home. And the people who focus on the alcoholic to be okay, to make them happy, they need help. Because if your happiness is dependent on somebody else's behavior, you're in deep doo-doo. Your happiness has to depend on God and how you are treating everybody, not on them. Anybody try to be dependent on other people for happiness? How'd that work? That's why we have a very high divorce rate. I'm going to marry this one. They're going to make me happy. And then you have expectations, and then they don't meet them, and they have expectations of you for making them happy. So that's why we have a sex inventory and sane sex ideal on what we're bringing into the relationship and what we expect to get, and have God mold that. They want to make a fuss over them. They want him to make a fuss over them, so they think, they want, they expect him to give them nice things they used to have before he drank so much, and to show his contrition for what they suffered. So this is one of those paragraphs where thinking, wanting, expecting, showing. They're depending on the other person, not on God. It's well written. But Dad doesn't give freely of himself. He's still self-centered, and guess what happens? Resentment grows. Both parties. See, it's very, you know, the thing we don't talk about enough at AA is the person who's just coming back from treatment, coming back into a home. How does that go? How do we help them? It's, you know, we forget when we've been sober a while how hard it is. Or we also have a lot of exes. How you get along with the exes. You have kids with the exes. And how that goes. Resentment grows. As he's more resentful, he's less communicative, so they're getting angrier. Sometimes he explodes over a trifle. Anybody ever do that? Anybody get upset over a trifle? The family is mystified. They don't understand what's going on. They criticize, pointing out how he's falling down. Here's this, I love it. They criticize him, pointing out how he is falling down on his spiritual program. But what about their spiritual program? You see, and that's the problem. I've worked with a lot of guys who are doing really well spiritually, but their exes are getting worse spiritually. And it's very hard for them to deal with them. And so we have to work on that a lot. LPT-KCC, they're not going to change. We have to change the way we relate to them. So a lot of people don't want to let go of resentment towards the alcoholic. Why? Because then they can blame him for all their problems. He's the reason things aren't going well. He's the reason my life's a mess. Blah, 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 blah. If you had done this, blah, 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 it's really ill. This sort of thing can be avoided. How can it be avoided? And this is really good information. Both father and the family, or the alcoholic and anybody, are mistaken. Why? Mistakes. Remember it says we probably admit our mistakes? Mistakes in thinking. Their thinking is wrong. They're seeing things wrong. They're seeing it through self-centered glasses. They're not seeing it through God-centered glasses. They're not seeing it through love and tolerance, are they? Now, though each side may have some justification, everybody wonder how, I wonder how these divorce judges wonder how these people ever got married. You know, I mean, really. But there's really no justification, is there, for your resentment, your anger? If you're with God, what do we have to forgive? Everything, remember? We have to forgive if we want to be free of the bondage of self. It is of little use to argue and only makes the impasse worse. Where does it say we avoid retaliation or argument? Does anybody remember? Page 67 in those prayers. After you say, God save me from being angry, it says we avoid retaliation or argument because we wouldn't treat sick people that way. Why? It doesn't work. Do you ever try to change somebody who's angry about something? It just gets worse. They just get angrier at you. Nobody wants to come between you and their resentment. It says the family must realize that Dad, though marvelously improved, is still convalescing. Convalescing means recovering one's health and strength over time. Remember, it's a period of reconstruction for everybody. This is great stuff. They should be thankful. In other words, instead of being criticized, let's be grateful. What can be grateful for? He's sober. He's at least going to work. Let them praise his progress. Remember, praise and gratitude go a lot further than anger and intolerance. Try it sometime. When somebody, just give them some praise and be thankful. Let them remember that his drinking wrought all kinds of damage that may take long to repair, may never be done. If they sense these things, they will not take so seriously. Now, this is really important. You could take seriously somebody's crankiness, depression, or apathy. But look what it says. That will disappear when there's tolerance, love, and understanding. And it goes both ways. So if you're in a relationship with someone, if you're tolerant, loving, and spiritually understanding, they're going to eventually get less cranky, less depressed, and less apathetic. Now, this really ties into another powerful paragraph on 118 that I think everybody really needs to try to practice. And this, I think, is the key. We talked about being is so important in Alcoholics Anonymous. What we be, how we be, are we being God's character, will determine what we do. What we be determines our thinking. Is it patient? It says, he wants to make good. You must not expect too much. His ways of thinking or doing and doing are the habits of years. Remember, Joe and Charlie made the point, you practice self-centeredness your whole life. You were good at it. Anybody good at being selfish, intolerant, inconsiderate, judgmental? I mean, I think we were like all pros. We were like first-round draft choices of self-will run riot. But patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. And it says every morning on page 77, we ask our Creator for love, patience, and tolerance for the family, and I ask it for everybody. I need to practice that. Am I bringing patience, tolerance, and understanding, love into every situation? Someone talked about a thing today. They might write LPTKCC on their palm. And when the other person starts to talk, just look at this and go, LPTKCC. And tell them that, LPTKCC. And they'll look at you. Well, then they say something else, LPTKCC. Show them these things in yourself and they will be reflected back to you from him. You see, that's the key thing. What you bring in any situation is what you're going to get out of it. And build that plastic shield of tolerance between you and another human being that you get from the Lord, that no matter what they do, you're not going to get disturbed. So when you're going into a situation, say, okay, Lord, put that shield in front of me, so no matter what they do, I won't get upset. And that's in Ephesians, I think, chapter 6. He talks about the helmet, the shield, the sword, the belt, the breastplate that we have to put on to protect ourselves. He's talking there from the wiles of the devil, but put on this shield between you and anybody out there so you don't get disturbed. And sometimes it has to be really thick. And sometimes you have to put another one on. And show them these, and that's where the pausing comes in. Pause and say, okay, give me a stronger shield here. Show them these things in yourself, they will be reflected back to you from him. Live and let live is the rule. Live and let live, in other words, let them be whatever they want, and you live your life, and not in reaction to them. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, not their defects, that's the other thing. They want to fix my defects. I get analysis a lot. It's helpful, but I forget it pretty quickly on what I'm supposed to do better. Anybody else get that? I have a husband improvement course, and it's this huge book. It's about 30 pounds. And I have to keep looking up the page and the title. Is it the Old Testament or the New Testament? I can't remember. I'm having fun, but, you know, my wife's great, actually. She puts up with me. There would be little need to criticize. You see, if you're willing to remedy yourself, isn't that the key? Then there's very little reason to criticize somebody else. Why are people critical? They're unhappy, they're depressed, they're angry, they're fearful, and they come at you, and so you have to just say, that's the way they are today. That expression, LPTKCC, really came out when I was working with somebody years ago, and the ex-wife was just really, really difficult. And I'd say, how's she doing? LPTKCC. He'd say, well, how's Patty doing? LPTKCC. And then that became a thing, you know, LPT, we are who we are. They're not good, we're not bad. We're not good, they're not bad. We are who we are. We're all human beings, we all fall short of the glory of God. It says, the head of the house ought to remember that he is mainly to blame for what befell his home. But he's mainly to blame. But as he may be the blame through our selfishness sober, and then our drinking and using, but they get ill by focusing on fixing us. And so they become dependent on us for how they feel, which is really sick. And that's why they need to refocus as well. He can scarcely square the account in his lifetime, but he must see the danger of over-concentration on financial success. Remember, God doesn't care how much money you have. He only cares if you're loving his children and serving him and others and loving your neighbors yourself. He must see the danger of over-concentration. Although financial recovery is in the way for many of us, we found we could not place money first. For us, material well-being always followed spiritual progress. It never preceded. There's so many lines in here that are so powerful. Now God must come first. Material well-being will always follow spiritual progress. People say, well, I've got to get my job and everything back and get my life settled, and then everything will be good. Well, that's hogwash nonsense. And page 98, this powerful paragraph, two paragraphs. It is not the matter of giving. They're talking about how you give to the new alcoholic, but when and how to give. This often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute I put my work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon me rather than God. He clamors for this or that. You ever have any clamoring alcoholics or clamoring others? Claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Now, what do they say? This is another sentence. Stu loves this. Nonsense! Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people, dependence on God. And I put dependence on anything. Is God everything or nothing in your life? What's your choice going to be? What's your choice all day long? That'll determine how the day goes. What's your choice in the moment? If you're choosing yourself, then you're going to get sensitive and you're going to be critical. If it's God, you're going to have this big shield between you and them. Burn the idea. Notice this. Burn. You have to burn the idea into the consciousness of every man. Burn it. That he can get well regardless of anyone. That's true for everybody in the family. It's true for everybody in the world. Look at the news and TV. Everybody's in conflict with everybody and everything. It's just very sad. And it's not just our era. You look through, read the Old Testament, New Testament, going on forever. The only condition, if you want to get well, is that you trust in God and you clean house. And when you trust in God, God is everything. And then you're spiritually fit. And then you have faith and you're using it and you're allowing him to work in your life. Faith without works is dead, remember? I just put out the third podcast on that on the site. Clean house. What do they mean by clean house? You have to clean your mind all the time of all the crap in there. And in step 10, it's all day long, right? All day long. Am I on the left-hand side or the right-hand side? Am I practicing God's will or my will? Am I going to let go of this and ask God to remove it or not? And it all starts with focusing on God, seeing that you're disturbed, getting right with God, and then the disturbance will go away. So I think I blabbered enough today. And we ended on page 127, and I'll make a note. I hope this was helpful. This chapter is so loaded with stuff. And so... We're going to open it up for sharing, and thanks for coming.